Hi, welcome to the MVC screencast series using ASP.NET MVC with community tools. Brandon Satram here, and this is episode 2, SpecFlow & Watton, part 1 of 2. This and other screencasts from the MVC series are available at bit.ly/MVC screencasts. Let's kick things off with a shameless plug. If you want to know more about TDD, BDD, acceptance test-driven development, and where SpecFlow and Watton might fit in your development process, check out an article I wrote for the December 2010 issue of MSDN Magazine. Now, on with the show. If you're familiar with test-driven development, or TDD, you've probably seen a graphic like this before. In TDD, the development process starts with a developer authoring a failing test. More upfront design than testing, this test is meant to describe in code a set of actions and an expected result from exercising some piece of production code. The TDD process illustrated here is referred to as red-green refactor. Because most of the automated testing tools like NUnit, MBUnit, and MSTest display failing tests in red and passing tests in green within the test runner. So, in keeping with that process, the developer first writes a test and watches it fail. Then, he or she writes just enough code to make that test pass. Finally, the developer refactors that and any other affected production code, crafting, molding, and improving the design of the system as each new piece of production code is added. TDD is an elegant process and one that countless developers and teams have adopted in daily practice. That said, many developers and teams have not adopted TDD, seeing it as a pure testing practice that belongs to dedicated testers and QA teams, rather than the design practice that it truly is. Others pick up with TDD but struggle to maintain the practice over time, especially as projects draw to a close. Finally, some want to use TDD in their practices, but they just don't know where to start, and aren't sure of how TDD fits into their existing larger design, dev, and test cycle. Most of these problems actually stem from the fact that TDD doesn't explicitly specify where its practices fit into the larger whole of a software development process. Now, several have just gone on and adopted the process anyway, and in the spirit of continuous improvement have found that sweet spot for the practice in their own organizations and their own teams. And some have even chose to share their thoughts on where the practice should fit. One such example comes from Steve Freeman and Nat Price, whose book, Growing Object-Oriented Software Guided by Tests, describes a test-first development practice that maps the inner loop of test-driven development, illustrated on the right-hand side of this diagram, to a larger end-to-end or acceptance test-driven loop, illustrated on the left-hand and encompassing the entire diagram. Freeman and Price recommend starting the TDD process with a failing end-to-end or acceptance test that describes a full feature of the system to be implemented. This process is also called acceptance test-driven development, or ATDD, because it emphasizes starting the process with a system-level test rather than a unit test. It's important to note here that this process is very much an outside-in process with nested cycles. The dev process starts with a failing acceptance test. That test will consist of a series of scenario steps that each fail one at a time. For each failing step in an acceptance test, the developer enters an inner TDD red-green refactor loop, writing unit tests and implementing functionality to make those unit tests pass, which cascade up to a scenario step passing. Once a scenario step passes, the developer moves to the next failing scenario step and re-enters the unit-level TDD cycle. This process repeats until the entire scenario passes and a piece of end-to-end system functionality has been successfully implemented. So, what does an acceptance test actually look like? Much like a user story. One of the easiest ways to get started with this type of acceptance test-driven development is to start with the user stories and backlog items that you've already likely been using in your projects. Much of the power in ATDD comes from mapping the requirements and specification process to the design and development process through the use of user stories as the starting point of an acceptance test. A user story, like the one here, describes the role and objective of a user of a system and is a great starting point for a failing acceptance test. Now that's all fine and good in theory, but much of the value of TDD for those who have adopted it is the ability of tools that enable automated test execution. So you might be wondering at this point what kind of tools might exist for acceptance test-driven development. Perhaps you've heard of Cucumber. an ATDD-style tool in Ruby that enables automated testing of acceptance tests. The graphic here illustrates the cucumber process, which is exactly like the red-green refactor TDD process, but for your acceptance tests. Note the given when then syntax in step 1. These statements each represent a step that Cucumber uses to match a step definition, the Ruby code that drives that step in the test. While Cucumber is a Ruby-based tool, there are a handful of tools inspired by Cucumber that provide the same capability to .NET developers, Cuke for Nuke and SpecFlow. Both share the same underlying given-when-then specification syntax, which is called Gherkin, with Cucumber. Today, we're going to take a look at SpecFlow. So just like Cucumber, SpecFlow enables you to create feature files that exercise a series of scenarios. Each scenario describes the actions in given-when-then syntax that a user will take to accomplish that scenario. SpecFlow will take your scenarios and map each step to a step definition method that you define in .NET code. That .NET code will then exercise the public APIs of your application, much like your existing unit tests do. SpecFlow is available at specflow.org. Remember, though, that we're talking about end-to-end testing today, not just another way to unit test. It is possible to use SpecFlow to exercise any public API of a .NET system. So in the context of my MVC application, I could use the tool directly against my controller actions. And I often will do this kind of testing when I need snappy, nearly end-to-end unit tests in my unit test suite. But for true end-to-end tests, I want to be able to test the site as the user uses it through the browser. Thankfully, there's a great tool for browser testing in .NET called Watten. Watten provides me with a series of APIs that allow me to interact with the browser as an object, directing its navigation and even interacting with the page currently being displayed. With SpecFlow and Watten together, I can use my acceptance test to author a truly end-to-end testing suite for my applications. Let's get started with the demos, first by installing both of the tools. So the first thing that you're going to do is go to specflow.org, click on the Downloads tab, and then from there you're going to grab the latest release of SpecFlow, which at the time of this recording is SpecFlow 1.4. You're going to run the installer, and you want to install the tools because there's Visual Studio integration that's part of SpecFlow that's very important to have outside of just the assemblies itself. So you want those core components. But you also want this Visual Studio 2010 or 2008 integration along with your project. So I'm going to download and go ahead and install that. Once that installation finishes, we can go ahead and install Watten. So go over to watten.sourceforge.net, click on the Downloads tab, and then you're going to grab the latest version of Watten, which at the time of this recording is the RC. Go ahead and save that locally, and I'm going to save that to the lib directory of my RazorLib project so that I can very quickly unpack that and get the assemblies that I need. Click on Save, and then open that and just go ahead and extract the files there locally. When that's done extracting, go ahead and close that out, and then I'm going to grab the assemblies that I need from SpecFlow and Watten and put those into my project. So from the program file SpecFlow installation, which is in TechTalk SpecFlow, I'm going to grab techtalk.specflow, and I'm going to copy that into my lib directory for the RazorLib project. Then I'm going to go into my Watten installation, and in the bin directory I need to grab three assemblies. I need this interop, I need Microsoft.mshtml, and I need Watten.core. Watten.core is the main assembly I need. The other two need to come along for the ride. So I'm going to take those. I'm going to copy those. Once those are copied over, I'm good to go. And I have SpecFlow and Watten installed, and I'm ready to use them. Now that we have things downloaded and installed, let's add an acceptance test project to our RazorLib application and get things set up for SpecFlow and Watten to work together. You'll remember from part one of this screencast series that RazorLib, a Razor helper sharing site for developers, is our sample application for the series.
Let's start by adding an acceptance test project into the RazorLib application. Now, because we're using the Microsoft Unit Testing framework here, we're going to add a new test project. If you're using InUnit or another framework, you would just create a simple class library. Use that. We're going to call this RazorLib. Acceptance test. And then we're going to add references to the Specflow and Wanton assemblies. You can grab wanton.core, techtalk.specflow, add both of those. Now, after you've done that, you might need to make one additional change depending on the test framework that you're using. If you're using InUnit, which is the default that Specflow uses, you don't need to take this next step. But if you're using a different test framework that Specflow supports, you're going to need to add an app.config file into your acceptance test project. Add that in. Then I need to add a config section for the actual Specflow section that I also need to add. The most important piece here is this unit test provider, which I'm going to change from InUnit, which is the default, to MSTest. Now there's one final piece of setup that I need to do to use Specflow and Wanton together, and that is to create a web browser helper class that actually allows me to save an instance of the browser into the Specflow scenario context. So I'm going to create this new step helpers folder, and this is what I'm going to use to create different classes and objects that I'm going to be that I will leverage across all of my tests. I'm actually just going to add a class file here, and I'm going to call that web browser, and then inside of that, and so I'm going to create this as a static class, and then create another static property here called current, which will give me basically the current instance of the browser. And so what I'm doing in here is I'm checking the current scenario context. Scenario context is a Specflow object that allows me to pass objects back and forth from different steps so that I can share states, share context between those steps, and make sure that in a multi-step run that I'm using the same instance of an object. In this case, that's going to be a browser object, and that's going to be the IE object, which Wanton uses to allow me to control the web browser in my code. And once that builds, I'm ready to begin implementing my first feature in Specflow and Wanton. Now that we have everything set up, let's implement our first feature. What we need to do, and I've created this new features folder inside of the acceptance test project, is click on Add New Item. And you'll notice that when you install Specflow that it adds a couple of file templates for you. The most important ones to think about are the feature file template, which creates a .feature file, and the step definition template, which is a class file that has some code samples in for actually creating a step definition with a binding attribute and things like that. So we're going to create a new feature. We're going to call it createHelper.feature. And the first thing that you'll notice is that Visual Studio actually recognizes this .feature file. Part of that Visual Studio integration is recognizing what a feature file is and how it can be interpreted. So we're going to create our first feature. And this is the feature that I created for actually creating Razor helpers, right? So I specify within the feature why this feature is important, what my context is, and then just a summary of the steps that I'm going to be taking. And then I can create one or more scenarios, and you'll notice that I get syntax highlighting as well because of this. So Specflow keys off of given, when, and then syntax. So what happens on the back end after I create this and save it is you'll notice as you click on this file down in properties that there's a custom tool being used. And this custom tool is called the Specflow Single File Generator. So that custom tool is actually what takes this plain text, this plain English text, and actually converts that into a test. And it does that on the back end, actually using code behind that's automatically generated by the designer. So you don't ever want to actually edit this code, but I'm going to walk you through it really quick so that you can see what's going on here. So first is an attribute here that's specific to our testing framework. So if I had specified in app.config a different test framework, InUnit, XUnit, MBUnit, something along those lines, then this attribute would be different. In this case, because I have specified Visual Studio in MSTest, it's going to recognize that and generate that for me automatically. And you'll notice, so I'm using the ReSharper test runner, that this is where my test is actually defined. The feature file is how I've described that in plain English, but the auto-generated code is what actually contains the test bindings and the correct attributes for that. So that's the test. You've got a series of setup and teardown methods that are auto-generated by Specflow. Each scenario specified is an actual test method. So Specflow starts up a scenario info object, and then it passes each of your statements in as either a given or an and or a when or a then. So my first statement is, given that I'm logged into the Razor website, which is my current context, and that I'm on the home page, so that's two steps that I'm specifying for my current context. Specflow takes these and passes these in into the test runner, and then these are matched via regular expression to step definitions that I should have in code within the same project. My when statement specifies I click a link, I click a helper's link, and then I click a create a helper link, and then for the data that I'm actually passing in, right, so this specific statement here, completing the form of the following information, SpecFlow takes that and turns that into actually a SpecFlow table that it passes into my test runner as well. So the test runner then continues. It passes that table into this this statement. And then my then statement is the final. That's the actual verification that I should see this message helper created on the screen. SpecFlow runs all of those, collects any errors that come up, and then passes those errors back out to me after it's completed running the test. So I have my first scenario. Now I'm actually going to come back in here and I'm going to click in the gutter here and run this current test. This is going to open up my ReSharper test runner in another tab. And then SpecFlow is going to do the business of actually going and parsing that and determining whether or not I actually have the features or the steps implemented for this, which I don't. So this is going to come up as a failure, inconclusive, because I have not yet actually implemented any of the steps that SpecFlow is expecting to see. So when I click on the actual test failure, you'll notice that the failure message actually tells me what SpecFlow is looking for. So it didn't find a matching step definition for this step. And you'll see that several times because I don't have any of those step definitions yet. So I don't have a step definition for being logged onto the site or for being on the site homepage. So I need to go and add those steps actually to my project now. So what I can do is I can actually come down to the bottom here, and this will put all of this in one nice little class for me. Then I can copy that and actually go into my acceptance test project. I'm going to do add new item, and this time I'm going to pick a step definition. Take out what's put in here by default. I'll copy in what I just copied from the test runner. So you'll see that SpecFlow not only does that matching for me, but also tells me when I'm missing a step definition, one or more step definitions, it tells me exactly what I need to create a match so that I can run that code. So now that I have these, let me go ahead and build again. And now let's come back over to our test tab and let's run that. It's of course going to happen now because I haven't actually implemented anything. Is an inconclusive exception, basically saying that the step definitions haven't been implemented yet. But at least I know that the matching is correct at this point, that I can come back in here and go through the process of actually implementing these one at a time. So let's start with the first line. I'm going to take this given I'm logged into the RazorLib website, and I'm going to add in the functionality that I need to actually work with the browser. So notice that I'm actually using the current web browser. I'm actually using my web browser helper class, and then getting the current instance of the browser, and then using Watton, I'm actually calling against the IE object to go to the account/logon page. Then I'm looking for using Watton to actually look for a text field by username, and then typing the following text. Looking for the password field and typing this text in the password field, finding a logon button, clicking that, and then asserting that I've actually successfully logged onto the site. So we'll go ahead and run this test, and then the site will come up. Notice we're on the account page. We should be able to log in successfully. And we've been able to log in. So then you'll notice on the result that we've passed our first step. Right? And now we have pending on the next step, right? Because we have not yet implemented that step. So we need to continue on in the process and move back to our helper, back to our step definition, and implement the given I'm on the site homepage. Move to the homepage after we've logged on. Run that test again. It will open up the browser, log us in, and then go to the home page, move us another step along in the process. Right, so now we have two steps that have been completed and several more that are pending. So I'm going to go ahead and implement the rest of these behind the scenes. So now I've gone ahead and implemented the rest of these, but let's walk through them very briefly. For the next step, which is when I click the Create a Helper link, I'm looking for that link by text on the page, and then if it exists, clicking that link. I do the same thing with the button. When I'm looking for a Create Helper button on the screen, and then clicking that if it exists. Here's another link that I'm clicking, and an opportunity for refactoring that we'll perform a little bit later. And then here's the work of actually filling out each row in this table that I'm passing inside the feature. So if you step back over to the feature file, you notice that I'm passing in a series of field names and then their values to be entered into the table. So what I'm instructing SpecFlow to do at this point is to iterate over each one of those rows, find a text field on the page with that field name, And then if that exists, actually type that text into the screen. And then my final step, which is my verification step, is to assure after I've clicked the Save button that the helper created message shows up on the screen. So now that we've implemented these, let's go ahead and run the test again. So I've gotten for a few more steps, but once I click on the Create a Helper link, I'm not finding the next helper link on the page. And the reason that I'm not finding that is because the helper controller in the index doesn't actually exist. So as I mentioned earlier, because I'm following a test-driven development process that works outside in, I've moved from the outer loop of my acceptance test into the inner loop of test-driven development, because I've identified a unit that needs to be created, and that is my helper's controller. But in order to create my helper's controller, I need to express the need for that controller through a failing test. So I'm going to create a new test in my unit test project, and we're going to call that helper's controller tests. And then I'm going to create a test method that actually identifies the need for the controller and for the index action. So I know that I need this controller now. I can come back into my site project, into the controllers folder, and I can add a new controller. I'm going to call that helpers controller. And then when that's created, I'm going to modify this default index method so that I get the right failing test that I want. So this will compile now. And I can go ahead and run this test. So that's going to add that to my current scenario. Drag this down a little bit. And that should fail, which is important. It's important to see a first failing test, even when you think you know exactly what needs to be implemented. You need to know that this test has failed. So it failed for the right reason. I can come back into the controller now and actually implement what I want here. And this is going to return the list view. As I said before, the views have already been defined. But in this case, inside of my helper's controller, the list view basically just shows a list of helpers that have already been created in the system. So I know that's the first step that I need to take. I can run my test again, and that will pass. So now that I have a passing test on my inner test-driven development cycle, I can move back up to my outer cycle, my acceptance test, and see if I've been able to get any further in the process. It's going to open up IE and watch as Watton interacts with the page. So now we got to the helpers page, we got to the index, but now when I attempted to click on the create link, I got an error basically saying that the resource has not been found. Right? The controller, that controller action doesn't exist, so I'm not yet able to actually map that to my view. So what I need to do now is actually create that create method. So in order to do so, I need to specify the failing test. So I'm going to come into my helpers controller test. I'm going to specify that failing test. I know that I need the create method now. So I can come in. Now I want to define this as a failing test. So I'm going to add that and just return null so that it'll compile and fail for me as I want it to. Now before this will build, I do know that I need to actually create my helper, right? That's one of the other, the assertion I've got in this test is to make sure that the model passes back an instance of the type helper. If you go up into my models, I haven't yet created that type. So I'm going to create a new class. We're going to call that helper. And we're going to define it like so. I need to actually create a reference to that. If I haven't, I can add it. I'm going to come up here and actually add a using statement. Core models. And I can run this test now. Now it's going to fail, because I want it to fail. But once that does, I can go in and actually complete that appropriately. So the create is just going to return a new instance of the helper, and actually return the create view. So now that I've done that, come in and run the test again. And once that passes, run the acceptance test. And I'll watch as I move again, just a little bit farther along in the process of actually creating a new helper. This time, the page comes up. Watton is entering those fields for me as I specified them in the actual feature file in my scenario. And I have a failing test. This time, I actually click the Save button. You'll notice if you come down to the individual steps that I got further in the process, right? I was able to complete the table. I was able to click the Create a Helper button, and I'm really failing on my very last step, which is just that the message helper created is not showing up on the screen. And of course, we know it's not showing up on the screen because I haven't yet implemented that save functionality appropriately. So in order to implement the save functionality, I need to create another method inside my controller, an action result that actually accepts a post create with a populated helper that comes in. But in order to do that, of course, I need to create my failing test. So here's a test. My test is, creates a new helper, navigates to a new instance of the controller, and actually calls the create method, the text helper, which we haven't defined yet. So in order to get this to compile, we're going to create that create method. Right? So HTTP post accepts a helper and, of course, just returns null right now because we want to be able to build and run and watch this fail for the right reason. Okay, that's going to fail for the right reason, so we can come back in here and add this line, which is going to do the redirect to action after the save. But we don't yet have the save, and because I like to keep things nice and separated, I'm not actually going to do the save inside here, inside of my controller. I want to delegate that to an actual repository. In order to create a repository, though, I need to create a failing repository test. Create a test method that expresses the save functionality that I want to implement. So creating a new instance of the helper. And now I know I need that helper repository. So I'm going to go ahead and create a helper repository. And my repositories I like to put up in infrastructure. I've got a folder for that already. So I'm just going to do add new class. We're going to call that helper repository. I'm going to add that save method. Come in and run this again. So you'll notice now that we have three different failing tests, and these sort of cascade down. We have our acceptance test that's failing, a unit test that's failing that caused us to kick off another test-driven development cycle to actually save, to actually implement repository functionality so that we can actually save that. So I'm going to come into my helper repository, and I'm going to implement that save. In this case, my data access strategy is to save to a static list on side of the repository class itself. So run my repository test again. This time, this should pass. Now I can add that functionality to my controller. So I step back in the controller, but it's still a little bit more complex than that, right? I don't want to new up my repository inside of my controller. So I'm going to use my IOC container of choice to do that for me, which in this case is structure map. But in order to do that, I want to have an interface. And so I need to create an interface using my existing implementation of the repository. So now I can come into back into my controller. I have my interface. I've already set up structure map to handle this, to handle dependency injection for me. So that's another topic for another time. We'll cover that in the future webcast. And I can now add the save call in here. It won't build. And the reason it won't build is because I actually need to go into my controller tests, and I no longer have a parameterless constructor, so I need to actually give that an instance of the helper repository. So I'll run that. And that will pass. And then at this point, I would run the acceptance test again. I'm not, for the sake of brevity, I'm not going to run that again, because what's going to happen at this point is that's going to fail when I try to redirect to the details action. The details action doesn't exist yet, so I don't have any way of actually mapping that to the view that does already exist. So I'm going to come back into my controller test, and in order to create the details action, I need to express the need for that here in a failing test. So I create a new helper. I go ahead and call the create action to create that, and then I go back and attempt to call the details method, passing in that ID to make sure that it exists. So this won't compile yet because I need to create the details method. I'm going to create it here. This won't compile, of course, also because I need to implement this method inside the repository as well. We're going to go ahead and do that and then swing right back in a minute. So you'll see that I've implemented the get method on my repository. Everything is good to go there. I have a repository test to actually test and make sure that this get method works properly. I'm going to go ahead and run that, and that will pass for me. Then I have a helper's controller test as well. I'm going to go ahead and run this now because my helper's controller will pass, will compile because I've implemented the get method. So now I'm going to run my controller test here. So now that that passes, I can rerun my acceptance test, and now I should be able to walk all the way through the end-to-end process of actually creating a helper in the system. So the test will pass, and I've implemented an end-to-end feature using SpecFlow and Watton with an inner test-driven development cycle. That's it for this screencast. But once again, if you want to know more about test-driven development, behavior-driven development, acceptance test-driven development, and where SpecFlow and Watton might fit within your development process, check out an article that I wrote for the December 2010 issue of MSTN Magazine. Next time, I'll continue exploring SpecFlow and Watton, and we'll discuss step definition refactoring, tags, and reporting. Then I'll cover MVC Contrib in two episodes, followed by Structure Map to wrap up January. And of course, this and other screencasts are always available for on-demand viewing and downloading at bit.ly/MVC screencasts. I hope this has been helpful. If you have comments or questions, feel free to contact me via email, at my blog, or on Twitter. Thanks for watching.